You're listening to Around Comics for January of 2011. Happy New Year! Chicago, this is Around Comics, the comic culture podcast, where each month
we talk about
comics,
whatever
stuff
comes to our mind.
Yeah. On this episode for January of 2011, Sal and I are joined by Mr. Tony Akins,
international man of mystery, Tony Akins,
and we talk about a variety of subjects, including Patton Oswalt,
that nerd,
Alan Moore and Jason Aaron,
those bearded jerks,
Werner Herzog and airplane propellers. And
I don't know who that is.
And we joined the conversation in progress, talking about film treasures and Kodachrome.
Frank Capra, the photographer, not the director.
Yes, although, but it is a wonderful life.
I don't know. Was Frank Capra's life wonderful? His love of his life died.
The movies were good.
That's Frank Capra.
Oh.
This is Kappa.
Oh.
Oh, forget it. Just listen.
Because I bought a volume on Kappa. And,
Kappa or Kappa? Yes? Okay.
Frank Capra, the war photographer.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
I thought you were saying Frank Capra.
Capra.
Wonderful Life. So,
yeah, I know that dude too.
Is that, it's Wonderful Life?
So she goes, did you hear about the Mexican suitcase? I'm like, the what? It's like, is that a sex move?
The Mexican suitcase.
That's what happens after the Spanish Fly.
Right. Yeah.
Can you take a midget? You
did
fold
you hear
her
about
up?
The Mexican suitcase? And I said, no. Well, Kappa, the woman who he always loved, she died during the Spanish Civil War. She was killed in a Republican retreat. She was run over by a tank, and he always lamented her loss. She was also a photographer, and that was their war. They photographed it as a couple. Anyway, recently, a valise has turned up in Mexico City, and they open it up, and it's all these compartments, and it's just roll after roll of film shot by both of them.
Wow.
And it's been lost for, 70 years.
You can't
develop any Kodachrome anymore. They shut that
down. Still, because And so it's called the Mexican
suitcase. It's
probably
older than that. Wow.
And it's just like all of these undiscovered. I think they're archiving it now, and we can expect to see prints from it. It's pretty amazing. Awesome.
Did you happen to see that story about Kodachrome, how they've stopped the last processing developing machine ever? They shut it down. They just shut it down this week in Kansas. Was it Kansas City?
I have like three rolls in my glove compartment.
You're done. They had people come from Russia with like $15,000 worth of film because
they had a guy drop off 1,500 rolls.
Yeah, because they announced a year ago that this was going to be the day. That was it. They were shutting it down, and the guy who owned the place, actually, his was the last roll that they developed. And it's the last one ever. They were the last Kodachrome developing station in the world.
Kodak. Vacation photos.
Kodak right? Doesn't... his?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what his... No, his was like the people that worked there. He took pictures of like people in front of the building and people that worked there and everything. And it was really interesting. It was actually a really interesting story about these crazy people just coming there with trunkfuls of Kodachrome film and getting it developed, and because that was it. If you didn't get it developed now, man, you're done. There's nowhere to get it developed.
Wow. Oh, cool.
It was really sort of an interesting story. So
that's one of those nerdy things. Those Kodachrome.
Yeah, it was. I don't even know where the article was. I don't know where I picked it up from, but Geeko system or something.
Here's my first week segue of the show, talking about geeky nerdy stuff. Sal had sent me a link to a Patton Oswalt article that he had written about.
Oh, I did.
It was
called The Wake Up Geek Culture, Time to Die. And it was in Wired Magazine. It was Patton Oswalt, the comedian. I don't know if you know who Patton Oswalt is. But it was an interesting
really
article.
Liked it. Yeah.
I did. The problem I have, I mean, basically what he was saying is that when he was a kid or when he was growing up, you know, being a geek was a niche thing. Like, you know, you were sort of ostracized for it. You
were lucky to have a couple
of friends that were
geeky,
that were into
friends.
The same geeky stuff that you were into, and that kind of thing.
You had to work for it.
Yeah. Well, that was sort of his point. But now it's like it's become so mainstream, and he thinks that because of that, it's not. Because now that we have just sort of this endless pop culture resources, especially with the internet, and it's just constantly regurgitated, that it's not making people create new things. Sort of an interesting article.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with it was, A, whenever someone starts out an article or starts out saying, well, I was a geek back then, and it's just like, okay. But it's like, Patton Oswalt, you're one of the like, you were on the bleeding edge of
making
geek
chic.
Becoming popular,
right.
You know what I mean? It's like you're one of the guys that benefited the most from that movement, and
well,
now you're
for a sports analogy, it's kind of like, you know, now that the Bulls are good again here in Chicago, it's like on sports radio, a guy calling up and saying, "Well, I'm a season ticket holder and have been since 1980, so I've been here when they sucked, and now we've got all these bandwagon
jumpers."
You have to
qualify yourself as a geek, and you
it's
know,
Pat,
and
we know you're a geek. It's okay.
Yeah, that was a weird. It was an interesting article. I don't know if I agree with them about how, because of all the availability of pop culture information.
Well, one of the things that I pulled out of it, and one of his points was, okay, say there's a director that becomes very popular in geek culture.
Michael Bay.
Okay, Michael Bay. Michael Bay gets tabbed to direct Wonder Woman. Okay, so now every geek is going to become a Michael Bay aficionado. Well,
right.
You can go home.
Right, an expert on Michael Bay.
You can go home and you can BitTorrent every movie that Michael Bay, every commercial, every video, whatever.
Right.
You can BitTorrent that and consume that over a long weekend if you want. And you know what? In today's world, now you're a Michael Bay expert.
Right.
Back in the day, whenever we were
back in the day,
you would have to go to every, you know, secondhand weird Kodachrome,
seriously,
you know, movie play and accumulate this stuff. You know, we all.
So you'd have to work for it a little harder.
You'd have to work for it harder. You'd have to have the resources in place. You know, it would be like
you'd
fencing.
Have to dedicate more of your life to.
There would be correspondence with people around the world and letters mailed back and forth to get rare prints of things. We talk about conventions. And why you go to conventions is because that was the only way you could get like rare back issues.
Yeah.
And now with the internet, you can become an expert or complete collections in as literally as fast as you can type.
This is true, which does diminish that badge of honor saying you're a geek, because you can, you know, do a crash course in the particular subject. I was watching a documentary on the French Institute of Cinematography, which is Langlois, I think is the guy's last name, and he's a guy who was born just prior to World War II, was passionate about film from go, and because of him, America fashioned their Institute of film archiving on his model, and he did basically what you just described. He would he was an avid supporter of film. He loved film, so he would write to directors. These are directors behind the Iron Curtain in the 40s, and said, you know, I would love to get a copy of, you know, of Ivan's, yeah, whatever. And in doing this, he himself sort of became this focus where people were like, I have this film, I'm a Czech director, and this is, you know, this is my last work, and I'm afraid that I'm going to be imprisoned, or this is
no one will ever see this.
I'm going to get this to
him.
Right. And so in that way, he built this huge archive. He would screen these films. He opened a museum, and people would show up for these screenings. There's a photo that is in the documentary where the theater is packed, and there's no room. So people would get down on the floor, and there's a photo in the late 40s where it's like a 17-year-old Truffaut, George, was it Roma, the other director, these guys who grew up to become legendary directors, all because of this institution, because this guy was a geek and a nerd, and he collected these films, and the collection still stands today. And you know, and the hardest thing for him was to keep the French government from getting their hands on this,
right,
because they figured, oh, this is a resource and it should be managed by a French institution. What this guy did, he created an institution under his own steam, out of his own passion, out of his own nerdiness.
Well, and I think, and that's, you know, like Chris said, you can go home over a weekend and all of a sudden become an instant internet expert on just about any subject
right.
you want. But it's that passion that is the difference.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
It's like, is that, you know, to me, it's not harmful that you can do that. Because it's just giving more people the opportunity that if they're passionate about something, to find that passion, find those resources, and then go forward.
Hi, this is Jason Aaron, writer of Vertigo, The Other Side, and you're listening to Around Comics. And if you don't sound off that you love the Virgin Mary, I'm going to rip your fucking guts out.
Interview that came out last year sometime where Moore had, in a roundabout sort of, well, maybe not a roundabout way, but in a way said that there weren't any top flight or middle flight or bottom flight talent in comics any longer. Now, you have to, before you, yeah, I know, before you...
Now, let's put it in context.
You have to put it into context a little bit. But anyway, that was my point, getting to the segue into this, is that in that article that Jason wrote, he starts out by saying, I'm the biggest Alan Moore fan ever, and at the end of the article, he says, fuck you, Alan Moore. So it is that like qualification of going, well, I am, or I was, or I have been, you know, an expert in something, so I'm qualified to say what I'm about to say, even though
sure.
I kind of think that
yeah.
I'm full of shit, kind of thing. But
sure.
Well, to move on to the Alan Moore thing, people have been going back and forth. I've already had three conversations with comic book creators and gotten into fights with these people that are my friends, and because I'm not a comic book creator.
They're easy to beat up.
Yeah, well, true.
Yeah.
I'm not a comic book creator, so his words didn't offend me. I don't work in the comic book industry. I don't write comics. I don't draw comics. So for him to say that has no effect on me personally, because it's not directed towards
Alan
me.
Alan Moore's comments weren't directed at you.
At me.
And Aaron's comments aren't directed at you either.
Yeah, neither one. Yeah, I have no horse in the race. I mean, I like Alan Moore's work.
Mm-hmm.
I like Jason Aaron's work. I think it's silly that, you know, to pick any
well,
kind of sides.
I think Jason was taking his creator hat off, and that was very much a disappointed fan's reaction
certainly.
To one of his idols that he felt slighted by.
My whole point with it was, is if you read the interview that Alan did, he's talking about how DC came to him and were, for some reason, asking him permission to allow them to do prequels and sequels to Watchmen. And in doing so, yeah.
Tony Does Giggles. That mean Watchmen babies?
I don't know. I don't know what it meant exactly. I'm not sure. But
we got to get Art Adams on this shit.
That's the context. And in doing so, they said, well, don't worry. We're going to put our top flight talent on them. Now, Alan being Alan Moore and him, at this point, I would imagine, pretty much just being so fed up with anything to do
I'm
with DC
Comics.
I'm
never working with you again,
yeah.
So I'm going to say
yeah.
whatever the
he
fuck
says,
I want.
Yeah. Well, there are. I don't think there is any top flight talent. There isn't any middle flight talent. There's no. There's not even any bottom talent in comics anymore. That's what he said.
That's where I would have been.
But to me, it's just like him taking a shot at anyone that would have done one of these sequels. If you know what I mean, and it's him basically saying, you know what, if you're gonna do one of these sequels, this is what I think of you. And he went on to say, hey, why don't they just make up their own stories and quit you know, trying to dig mine up.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's 25 years old.
I think he said, stop having sex with the dead corpse of,
no,
of my creation.
No, he didn't say that at all. He did not say that at all. No,
I believe DC is in a creative stasis, you know, I meaning that the stasis, right? They're
yeah,
in a
flatline.
Yeah, kind of flatline.
Well, yeah, they're just trying to keep their licensed properties revolving.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which, you know, I mean, comics does that. It's what's the symbol? The serpent that eats its own tail.
Right.
That's what comics is. We have to repackage these things to keep them fresh and viable and attract new audiences while trying not to piss off the old audiences.
Sure.
So that. That's a given in the industry, but I think DC is kind of going crazy with that. I mean, so I can appreciate what Moore is sort of saying from that point.
And like I said, I've already had three arguments with comic book creators that are just like the same thing Jason Aaron. Like, fuck him, you know, you know, he can kiss my ass, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, he's not personally saying to anyone that he doesn't even know. He says it himself, you know. And I'm not trying to defend the guy's words. He says shit because I think he just doesn't care, and it's like somebody asks him about it, and he's going to spout off whatever he feels at the moment, like anyone else, you know, would at the point of just sort of you're so sick of it, you know, the ad nauseum of always being asked about Watchmen, always being asked about.
And I think he doesn't do many interviews, and he doesn't talk about mainstream comics anymore.
Oh, but if you went on the internet, you would think all he does is interview after interview after interview.
You would think that he's much more John Byrne-esque. You know, he doesn't have a forum where he just, you know, spouts off his beliefs and doctrines on mainstream comics. But I think every time that he does get interviewed, and you know, it's the interviewer's job to ask him these questions, and they always come back to what he's most well known for, and he's going to give his honest opinion about it. And you know, Jason, to give his honest opinion back, he has that right to do that.
Oh, sure, absolutely. I mean, I just think there's no benefit.
There's no winning.
You're
going to convince. You're going to convince Alan Moore to come back.
But
and green,
at the same time,
and write, you know, Green Lantern again.
Yeah, well, that's just it. That, you know, Jason's like, well, I'm never going to spend another dime on Alan Moore.
Yes,
well,
he will.
You know, what is there to spend money on? When was the last time he wrote a comic?
April is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 1969 coming
all right,
out.
Well, I don't think he's going to miss
coming
that
out. Neonomicon is coming out from Avatar. I get a chuckle because about every year or so, Alan Moore comes down from the mountain, you know, like Moses.
Shakes the trees like King Kong.
It's like, you
and
know.
Everybody just loses their shit one way or another.
Because
it's like,
no one more.
I am Lur. It's
behold
crazy.
These 15.
Well, it's interesting.
These 10
I did have,
commandments of comic book writing.
I did have an interesting conversation with one comic book creator, and I won't say who it is.
You got that.
about the whole thing, and he was sort of looking into Jason's article, he was sort of projecting, in my opinion, some of his own feelings on it. But some of his own feelings about it were sort of interesting, where he was saying that, you know, he kind of would want comic book creators to say, fuck you to Alan Moore, because it's time to get past Alan Moore.
Yeah.
Right.
It's time for comic books to really put that stuff to bed and create something new and original and fresh and do something, you know, completely. And the only way maybe to do it is to... wash your hands completely of Alan Moore, not think of him anymore, not give him any, you know, credo, you know, but I don't know. It's hard to...
And I think that was, you know, the whole gist of it was Alan Moore saying, go make your Watchmen.
Oh, yeah,
don't
absolutely.
Make...
It was in a
snark.
It was in a snarky and mean and shitty way of saying it, but at this point, you know what, I think he's earned the right to be a little bitter and kind of pissy and...
Sure,
you know, whatever. I don't care. So he's an angry guy, you know, with a big beard.
No, he's British crazy, which is eccentric in some people's books.
Exactly.
I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if Alan Moore started like an underground radio broadcast where he just like sat,
that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. I will listen to that shit like it was Colonel Kurtz.
You
know?
Do you get the magazine? His magazine?
No, I don't.
Dodgem Logic. It is. Kind of that.
Yeah,
is it
it's
that?
Pretty insane. It's
watched a snail move along the edge of a razor.
Have you ever read what's the book?
Or listened to Snakes and Ladders?
Snakes and Ladders.
The audio, the there's an audio CD of Snakes and Ladders, and it's creepy and awesome.
He's got that deep guttural, you know, British.
I've been missing out.
It's cool.
He. What is the book? I can't think of his book now.
Something in the fire.
Yeah,
my balls in the fire.
The heart of fire.
Something fire. It's insane. I mean,
should I cut my beard on fire?
Yeah. A fart of fire.
A fart of fire.
All right, what else do we got to talk about? Let's talk. We're here with Tony.
But all props to Jason Aaron. I think if you don't have to suck up to Jason Aaron. No, but honestly, I think if you look at today's comic book writers, I think he is one of the futures for this industry.
Just write comics. Quit writing fucking nasty articles about other creators.
Go write more Scalped because it's really good.
So it's just not. There's no point to it.
All right, enough of these writers. Let's talk about some artists.
Let's talk some artists.
Speaking of, congratulations on the great run on Jack Fables.
Thank you. It's being.
You miss him?
I do miss him. Yeah. You know, I mean, and I have pages coming where I get to draw him.
I forgot my page. I was going to bring. I think I told you this before. I bought a page of Jack of Fables from Patrick here at the store.
Right.
And it says two patches. It says something like two patches.
You're going to scratch it out.
Tony to exit out and sign
say,
my name.
Screw
to it.
Patrick. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I want to happen.
To Judy, scratch Bender, sign Calculon.
That page was always meant for me. Patrick was just holding on to it for a little while.
Okay, well, you remember it next time.
I forgot it. I'm sorry. Go back to what you're saying about Jack.
About drawing Jack. Yeah, I'm drawing the last appearances of Jack in Jack of Fables. And yeah, I do miss it already. It's
good,
it's strange.
Run, though, man.
Yeah, 50 issues and and I think that this last issue will be pretty terrific. I mean, it's all action. It's all splashes. All splash pages. So
the whole thing?
Entire issue. It's like
talking about cashing in on some art.
Issue 50,
it's all
splash pages. All
splash pages.
You called up Sturgis like, bitch, I'm getting paid on this one.
I don't want to see any words. I gotta take a few months off.
Is there any way that we can get Wolverine and Deadpool into this issue?
Well, it's interesting, you know, 50 issues, that's a pretty solid run.
Yeah,
this this day and age,
seriously,
for an artist and writer to be on something for 50 issues is pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And for you, especially, to be on something for 50 issues, considering...
Well, technically...
You weren't all 50.
Not all 50. We did have, Russ Braun was the alternate artist.
But you were the primary for the majority.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, we can't nail you down. This interview, getting you here...
It's the International Man of Mystery.
Exactly.
Tony Akins is Chicago's International Man of Mystery.
Thank you.
We've always said that. I heard that you bumped into Sal over the holidays, and you were just like... Why do you guys say that?
I know. It was like, because I hadn't been called that since in a while. And so it's like, yeah, what is that about?
Where did that come from?
I don't know, but I'm cool with it.
Yeah. It's a good one to have.
As long as it allows me to carry my firearm, I'm cool with that.
Come on. Well, but part of it's because whenever you walk into a room, you're like, Akins, Tony Akins.
Right, yeah. Well, that's
you're always drinking, you know, martinis, shaking that stir. You know.
Well, that's kind of a joke. My girlfriend... her crew used to make fun of me because, you know, we're just like from different places. They're, you know, she's like 15 years younger than I am, and they're like kids.
See?
Yeah.
See?
You know, so my demeanor.
She's in college.
My demeanor always seems like very formal to them.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like, oh, it's Tony. It's like, I'm Tony Akins. You know, so they will always come to me. And so I took that and just made it mine. So everything I do, it's like if I'm writing, I was writing an email to someone who I had never met before. I think it was for this show. And so I would always lead off, I'm Tony Akins. You know, because it's a joke now. But
well, my favorite is then, so we're at talking that night, and
he's wearing a tuxedo.
Yeah, well, of course. No, but I'm like, hey, you know what? You need to come on the show. We need to get you on the show in next year sometime, and talk. I wanted to talk about what we're going to talk about next, which is the art gallery thing that you're doing. But I'm like, give me, you know, I don't know if I have your number, so give me your number. So he hands me a business card that just says Tony Akins on the front. No number, no email, nothing. And then on the back, handwritten is his phone number. Like, who the fuck has a... Why do you have a business card?
I have to keep a cold trail. You don't understand.
It's like, what's the radio commercial that Dos Equis most interests me? His business card says, I'll call you.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what it was. Like,
I was listening to NPR before coming over here, and they're talking about new shows coming on cable, and one of them is this Matt LeBlanc show.
Yeah.
And where he's like a parody
of
himself.
The guy from Friends?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Really? He's back.
He's a parody of himself, and there's a scene where he's walking across a restaurant to an appointment at a dinner, and he's talking on the phone, he's talking business, and he sits down, and he goes, I'm Matt LeBlanc. Why am I here? Now, why am I here? You know, this is like... He doesn't know, but he knows he's supposed to be
there, and
it's important.
No, really, why am I here?
Yeah. So
I want that kind of life.
Yeah, so that's what that card is. This is like, I've announced myself. I'm not sure why, but I felt the need to announce myself.
You know what? I think it just has your name, and that's it.
I think in life, you know, it's like 90% is what you put out there. And you know what I mean? Sooner or later, if you tell people that, you know, that you're awesome, sooner or later they're going to stop arguing with you. They're going to believe it, you know,
right.
And then you are.
Right.
And then that's
I hope that works. Well,
it's worked for us.
We tell people you're an expert enough, and you're an expert.
You're an expert, yeah. If you say you're an expert, you're an expert. If you say you're...
Well, it's... there is a degree of passivity. I have friends who are actors, and one was playing at Shakespeare Theater... I think it was like King Lear or something like that, and he was, how do you play royalty? It's like, well, you don't play royalty. You let the people around you treat you as royalty, and you just sit there. You don't do anything.
Sure.
So that's exactly the same thing.
No, sure.
In truth, those cards are a misprint. I forgot.
Oh, God, the veil is ruined now.
No, he's making that up.
Yeah, I am
making that up.
They are a misprint because I wanted them stainless steel. Because I wanted them left embedded in the body of my peers.
All right, let's talk about the...
I would never be able to pull that card thing off.
Not with me around.
No,
there's no way
God,
you're pulling that off. The static creep exhibition, and I had a hell of a time, you know, finding any information about this show online. You haven't done a tremendous job of promoting it.
You know what? It was my job to put the thing together, and I'm letting the gallery promote. The gallery is in their earnest promoting the show.
Like, what gallery is it?
This is the Los Manos Gallery in Andersonville, 5220 on North Clark.
5220, that would be just north of Foster
just
Avenue.
Just north of Foster, yeah.
Because Foster's 5200, and my wife would be so proud of me for knowing that, because I'm terrible with street numbers here.
That's what do you mean she's 5200?
No, Foster is 5200 North.
Mm-hmm.
It's 52 blocks north of Madison.
Oh, yes.
Yes. In
Suburbanite.
Dork.
It's my otaku.
Shut up. You have like 90 of them. Shut up.
I know. Hey, I was gonna come back to that, so remind me too.
Okay.
So, all right. But anyway,
back to the gallery.
Yes.
So the show, yeah, the gallery is picking up the promotion this week, and things are so I don't know what's the word, meta, that you promote something like the day it's happening, and they can get it into print or it's digital, so they're taking that up. So we'll see much more.
It's a nice
press
location. There's a lot of street traffic.
Yeah, there's a lot of street traffic there. It's a great location.
Yeah, nice Starbucks right there on the corner.
Yeah, Kopi. I think it's a great spot for early winter show, and it is only early winter, isn't it? I mean, we're just out of the second week of winter.
I know. God. It is a cold and snowy night here in Chicago.
By Jove's knobby cock, it's cold outside.
Oh my goodness.
I've been saying that all day.
So what is the show?
Back to the show.
So
you're right. He does a terrible job of promoting this thing.
We gotta drag it out of him. It's like,
so the show. It's the Static Creep exhibition of sequential art. So the show is all local talent, 21 artists, all of them professional, all of them published, all of them capable, upstanding members of the comic book creative community.
Except Chris Burnham.
Except Chris Burnham.
Oh, God, Burnham? Is that?
Yeah, Burnham has his work there now. So I was actually approached about this 2 years ago by the gallery owner, Michelle Peterson. And we talked about it. And then finally this past summer, she said, you know, let's do it. We've got a hole in the schedule. So, you know, let's get it going. So I, you know, use my contact resources, whatever you want to call it, to sort of pick the talent that's going to be in the show. And the criteria is basically you have to be local, you know, local native to Chicago. The work has to be finished by yourself. So, like, all the work that I do for DC, which is finished by Andrew Peepoy, none of that's in the work. But
see, that could work because Andrew's from Chicago.
Right,
so.
But I really want.
There's a loophole there, man.
There is a loophole there. There certainly is. But I want it to.
You want it. Well, the art to be one person's art.
Exactly.
On the wall.
Okay. Yeah. And it's because people don't get a chance to shine a lot outside of a team context. So I know Andrew has plenty of work that he's done himself. Mm-hmm. I don't do as much. So that was the first. Two points of being eligible for the show, I don't know. I guess there wasn't a third point. I guess
was it published? Does it have?
It has to be published.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
It has to be published. There are a few pieces that aren't published, but majority, yes, yeah, stuff that's been in print.
Is it all sequential art? It's all.
It's all sequential art. There are a few artists there who are strictly cover artists. So Dave Dorman, Doug Klauba, Jenny Frizon, who do cover art, which of course is.
But it's all comic.
It's all
theme.
Comic.
Okay.
Comic related, comic themed.
Well, we mentioned Burnham and you and Jenny and Doug and who are some of the other folks that are there?
Let's see, who else is there? Heather McAdams, who has been away from Chicago, she just moved back. Bill Reinhold.
Was she vetted
like Ron?
Like Ron Emanuel?
Yeah, she had to go downtown and be berated by people.
Did she leave like a fur coat under the stairs at her apartment?
So why didn't you keep a housekeeper for your residence?
Yeah, exactly. No, but Heather McAdams was, I remember reading her work, seeing her work in The Reader when I was still in my late teens, in the early 80s, so... Who else? Dave Dorman, who I mentioned, Douglas Klauba, Kareem Muka, Jill Thompson, Andrew Peepoy, Burnham, Tim Seeley, Hillary Barda.
Hillary.
Jeffrey Brown.
This is like a who's who of Around Comics
Around
guests. Comic,
former Around Comics guest. Yeah.
So it's going to be a pretty tight show. All the pieces there are for sale. So, you know,
nice.
come with your wallet if you want to secure some nice original artwork. The opening is on January 14th at 6.
That is this Friday.
It's coming Friday.
If you're listening to
this beforehand.
Yeah. Yes. And the show will be up for 3 weeks. So,
good.
Yeah, so you have time to stop by.
What are the hours of the opening on Friday?
6 through 10.
Okay.
On Friday, yeah.
Okay.
So 6 p.m. through
it's
10 o'clock.
It's a busy night for art openings.
Tell me about it. I thought, I thought I was, pulling off the, perfect art caper by having the show in January. And it turns out, who knew? It's like there's four shows of the same night, What the hell? Because Patrick's having one here.
He's having the Sixth Gun showing at Rogues Gallery.
Yep. Yeah, and
which where we're recording
right now.
We're actually surrounded by Amy Reeder art, which is for sale here probably through the week. But yeah,
kind of sick of looking at it. Yeah. Honestly,
I got a funny story about one of these pieces.
Uh-oh.
But it'll be Brian Hurt and Colin Bunn on Friday, and they'll be back on Saturday. So
go to every.
My plan is
it's like a pub crawl. It's like a gallery crawl.
I'm going to leave work because I think this one opens at 7. I'm going to leave work. I'm going to go to Andersonville. Mm-hmm. I'm going to check you guys out, and then try and make it here for the second half of this one.
Yeah, dude. Actually, we're going to be talking later on about a common bar, some place in the middle for attendees of both events to meet
the Long Room on Irving Park.
I don't know that.
Just showing off your geographical skills.
Hey, man, ask me about a bar in Chicago.
Really?
On
Irving Park, is that west of the lake or east of the lake?
It is at the corner of Irving Park and Ashland.
It's...
and it's an awesome
east
bar.
Of the lake. Was that the question?
I was going to say eat y'all.
True question.
You're chicken them up there. Yeah.
It's in Holland, Michigan. Speaking of art, and we had mentioned it before we started recording. We're in the Rogues Gallery at Challengers, and we're surrounded by this Amy Reeder art. We were talking about women in comics, and I think you and I both agree that it's just not a big deal anymore.
No,
which is kind of
it's not.
It's kind of cool, and I think we're going to get
a big deal in the sense of it's not unique any longer.
Yeah,
it's not something we should make.
Ooh, it's a girl drawing that. You know, it's
well, it's always nice to see girls,
right?
Well, yeah, you
comics.
Know,
and I'd say women. Women, what? Not girls, but you know,
women,
girls,
ladies,
with three R's.
Hey, if Marvel can call them girl comics,
yes,
you know, we can too. Yes. But no, I think we're seeing more and more female creators, mm-hmm. and to the point that it's not a big deal anymore. And I think in the next you know couple decades, I think we'll get closer and closer to having
alien creators.
Lur, you have missed your deadline, and now I will raise the temperature of your planet, 1 million. I use that.
I don't know. I don't know.
I don't think it's a big deal anymore.
Well, no, I think it's still pretty rare. I mean, the percentages are
well,
not,
yeah,
like,
getting better. And I think it's going to be closer to half and half before two.
It's not even.
Whenever you factor in all comics, indie and mainstream, because there's a lot of female indie comic creators.
Yeah, I mean, just
they
looking
don't
at
count.
Looking
they're
at
not getting paid.
Well. Well, my show, the owner of the gallery, the owner of Los Manos, she's you know a feminist, and she really wanted to make sure that you know that there was a fair representation of
female,
women
sure.
in this show.
Well, in Andersonville, there better be.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just saying, I don't think the fight is over, ladies.
No,
don't let these guys pull the wool over your eyes and
bastards.
Make you think that it's you can relax now that the percentages are almost 50-50.
Seriously,
the fight is. The battle is not over.
It is not over.
Still going on. My female sisters in arms. I don't know.
Well, we were talking about one of the in another art yet another art show in Chicago. One of the gals that I believe had to pull out of your art
yes.
show because of this former guest on Around Comics, Lily Carey, mm-hmm. is.
I wasn't here for her.
Oh, that's the
she wrote
for French Milk. Was
I really liked listening to her, but I didn't get to
Meet her. Very nice gal. She's a Art Institute of Chicago grad, and she's had a couple published works. But she and Jeffrey Brown and Paul, I always mess up his name,
Hornswagler,
and Anders Nilsson are going to have an exhibit at the Museum of Contemporary Art.
That's cool.
Good Lord,
that's cool.
I sure thought these comic creators going legit.
I don't know.
Well, you know.
I know Patton Oswalt's
right. He's right about it. He's right.
All you geeks are going legit.
Museum showings, galleries.
Dirty. Basements and
it reminded me whenever Tom Caters and
I used to have to like go down to some dude's basement to deal art, you know, comic book art. That's where I got your page. I bought it at Patrick's basement. Absolutely, it was long before Rogues Gallery existed.
I remember when Tom and I interviewed Roy Thomas. This has been probably 2-3 years ago, mm-hmm. and Roy Thomas, being Roy Thomas, is like, you know, I really kind of miss the era when. As a comic book fan, you had to like read it with a flashlight under your covers. It was
everyone misses being eight.
Yes, yeah. Yes, especially Roy Thomas.
I'm sorry, Roy Thomas. Yeah. Sorry that you had to grow up.
Jeez, come on.
Well, that's all that Patton Oswalt is saying is that you know he misses like the insular you know kind
I don't
of like,
get hey
the
you know
isolated
what? I'm well, not in high school necessarily, but before high school, I was probably as much, if not more, of a geek than Patton Oswalt was. You know, but I don't.
You
like,
were Patton Oswalt's DM.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what I mean? High school changed
dungeon
things.
Dungeon master?
I was his dungeon master.
Check that out.
You should have seen
at
that same party that we were at. You missed the conversations I was having with Steve Seeley about Dungeons and Dragons. There would have been no question about who the biggest geek in the room was then. But I don't look back on it like I wish. I love how comics and all that stuff is. Even the worst comic book movies mm-hmm. out there
are better than no comic book movies.
Yes.
I like being able to go to Target and buy a really cool Marvel shirt.
Yeah, I love the fact that my kid may never read a comic book, but his room is decked out in Justice League of America stuff and Spider-Man stuff, and you know, every night he goes to bed in Superman pajamas. And
so we go to Chipotle tonight. We were picking up dinner before the show, and I've got a little Spider-Man button on my coat.
Geek.
And so I'm grabbing these bags of tacos and burritos, and the guy ringing me up is like, "Oh man, I like your button." I was like, "Oh, thanks. You know, I'm actually picking these up for a comic shop." He's like, "Oh yeah, you know, I did exist. I did my thesis paper on the paradigm of vigilante and
he was reading Watchmen.
No, he's written Civil War. He did his thesis on Marvel's Civil War.
Wow.
And the legality of street vigilantes and public perception.
It's funny.
Fucking Chipotle talking to this guy about the thesis paper that he wrote on Marvel Civil War. So I'm like, okay, we have arrived.
We totally have. I mean, setting up the show this week is obviously where the rubber meets the road, and we're having a minor clash on fine, because this gallery is a fine art gallery. So, so we're having to, you know, adjust a lot of the pricing on the pieces, because as a fine art gallery, you know, is about presentation, and presentation for comic artist is basically, you know, you
got a 6 foot table and a
right. So, you know, we have to dress this stuff up to be in a fine art gallery. So, and you see the two worlds, the two cultures, and I got
does that
on the
feel kind of weird though.
Well, it does feel kind of weird, you know. And I had to go to bat for my people.
It's a $10,000 frame on that.
I know. You know, it's like well, I you know, and of course I'm going to go to bat for my team, the comic team, and say, look, you know, these people, you know, this isn't fine art. These artists they're internationally known. They're multi award winning, you know, and we're not. You know, we have an effect. We're everywhere. We're on T-shirts. I mean, Jill Thompson has, you know, three television shows that they're going to be looping. So it's kind of a weird dichotomy between the fine art world and our world.
Well, it is. I mean, that's one of the things that makes comics, you know, it's unique and very interesting, is that it is this weird mix of fine and commercial.
Right.
And then you throw in the literary aspect, you know, it's just, I mean, it's a unique medium.
But
from the art standpoint, I mean, you look around at the stuff here, and you can't tell me that there's not an amount of fine art involved in this. But you know what? It was made for a publication. It's commercial. It is it's commercial fine art.
Well, I mean, I think in this, it's interesting because I think we've just, you know, I was reading an article about the art world and sort of the post postmodern era, and you know, the sort of the meta era that is, I guess it's being called now, the self-aware era, and it's like, isn't it sort of time to? I mean, haven't we gotten past the idea of like commercial art and fine art being different?
It's weird.
Didn't Andy Warhol kind of?
Andy Warhol, I mean, Jeff Koons,
Blow the Doors,
Murakami, Jeff Koons, Andy Warhol. We were talking about something earlier about the crew that's at the MCA, they're all artists out of the Art Institute, which is completely, it blows me away, because coming along as a professional artist, working in storyboards and then in comics in the Chicago area, it was pretty much a given that everybody else that I met went to school and came out of the American Academy of Art, which is downtown, because it's a school for commercial art, for practical illustration.
A lot of comic artists.
Yeah, a lot of comic art. I went to the Art Institute, which is a school of theory. It's a school of, you know,
it's a fine art school.
It's a fine art school. Right. So,
it's an international school of mystery.
Exactly. So I always felt as an outsider when I'm, you know, with these guys, because they're all, they have a different thought of, like, you know, what art is, even though.
Yeah. Anyway, and some of the folks that went to the American Academy, I mean, we're talking Alex Ross,
right?
what, Jeff Darrow? Darrow there?
Gianni's. There, yeah.
Darrow went there too. Okay. So, I mean, it's a pretty impressive list.
It really is. Yeah. But again, two different schools of thought. So I was thinking, you know, Hope Larson was also. She's out of the Art Institute. Mm-hmm. She lives somewhere else now, but she's a local artist. So it just shows the sort of the cultural turning of the universe where you're seeing comics being produced by artists coming out of the Art Institute. And I don't know if that tells us that the Art Institute is adjusting their curriculum
towards that, or the students themselves.
Right.
Or,
yeah.
I think it's more the students that are going in there. I had an intern.
I think it might be both.
It's kind of a chicken and egg thing now.
Yeah.
It's I had an intern that worked with me at Stanford that was an Art Institute student, and she's been out of the Art Institute for about 6-7 years now. And I asked her whenever we were talking with Lily Carey, I said, and I think that she knew Lily whenever they were going to school there. And I was like, you know, was there kind of a this growing feeling of comic book artist as, you know, being part of the curriculum? I said it was kind of starting to happen, but it really was students. You know, that it's one of those schools that you go there and you kind of build your own curriculum,
right,
kind of universities. Mm. And so I think there are more people that are going in with an interest in you know, comic books and cartooning.
I agree.
But more from the original graphic novel standpoint and the indie original graphic novel, mm-hmm, as opposed to, I'm going to go to the Art Institute and get a job at Marvel.
Right.
I think that's still much more like the Kubert school.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
and then you have artists that have no education that come up, and, you know, it's like
Scotty.
I think James Jean. I think
James Jean is actually out of what's the school in New York?
Mocha? No. That's a museum.
James Jean is out of the school in New York. Yeah, I mean,
or maybe I'm thinking of who's the other cover artist that does a lot of
J.G. Jones?
No, maybe. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, but speaking of James Jean, I mean, now there's an artist that went from comics covers to now is like,
fine art is
insane.
Yeah, you know, he was like, thank you, comic. Yeah, exactly. I'm gone. I'm going to go make some real cheddar
now. I just read a really sort of, not funny, but an interesting article in Juxtapose magazine, which is like a, it's a art magazine. It's street art, a lot of street art stuff and urban art.
Yeah, like lowbrow culture. Actually, it started at lowbrow, but now it's become
same sort of thing where it's changed. But, and they had a big thing in there on James Jean, and the way they talked about him, you know, sort of like his process, and, you know, he has like, I guess, this big warehouse where it's just him and another artist, and there's like nothing in it but a car and like his paint and all this. And I'm just like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's got a business card and it's only his name.
Yeah, it doesn't even have his name on it. It's just a blank sheet of paper. You know, and I'm just like, fucking artists, man. They get a little bit of fame, and all of a sudden they got to turn into weird. I'm fucking artsy.
That's the first thing I got at the Art Institute when I enrolled there was a piece of psychic paper. It's like, do not lose this.
It would be whatever you want it to be.
This whole conversation, I was happened to watch this show last night. It was the first time I ever seen it. It was called Oddities, mm-hmm, and it was about this little antique store in New York that they do a little reality show on the show and the shop, and it's like it's called Obscura, and it's like obscure and weird, mm-hmm, odd antiques, like, you know, human bones and just also, you know, weird, cool, that kind of stuff.
Cool.
But, you know, I'm like,
so it's like
I'm,
Friday the 13th, the TV show.
No, but the thing was, it was like, I'm watching it and it was like, you know, this husband and wife who own the place, and then this one other guy that works there. And it just sort of the people that work there, the people that shop there is just like, trying to be weird.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. Like that sort of like, oh, I'm going to buy I'm going to spend $1,000 on a skull and put it in my tattoo shop because it'll make me weird. You're not weird anymore. That stuff is so commonplace.
It really is. Yeah.
You know, it's not weird anymore. And when you pretend that it is, it's just so, you know.
And then you piss off Patton Oswalt.
And then you piss off Patton Oswalt and I guess me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I...
Sal used to get his own fucking skulls back. Yeah.
I dug him up. I want a skull, I'll take yours.
Before the holiday, when I was working, I got into the habit of audiobooks. So I've been listening to a lot of Lovecraft, which is like really great to rediscover. And because I haven't read it.
Any
since.
Any good voiceover? Who's doing the?
Well, they're all British. Right. Yeah, Alan Moore.
That actually pretty good. That would be good.
Some Cthulhu.
That would be cool. Yeah, and they're all British, you know.
Right.
Alan Cummings, maybe? I don't know.
Exactly. And you know, the stuff is written in the 20s and 30s, and there's a story of the guys who rob graves in order to decorate their parlor. And so, yeah, this stuff is like almost 100 years old.
Exactly. You're not Edgar Allan Poe.
They weren't going to eBay, though.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Hot Top, shopping on Hot Topic.
Hot Topic, God.
It's just an extension of that, though. You know, nothing's new. Nothing. You didn't originate being weird, and you're not. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like,
says me, the guy that bought the Marvel shirt at Target. Hey man, it was awesome.
No, there's nothing wrong with it, but just like embrace that. Like, who gives a shit where you know, like. Just be yourself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to put on anything. You don't have to.
Right. You know, just, I mean, you know, like, going back to, you know, this is like the character of artist, you know, how I don't know, the artist who wear it on their sleeves, and then there's the artist who just like keep it inside. You know, it's like you can look at people who, you know, or, I don't know, they have tats, they have, you know, bleached out hair, whatever they feel like they have to wear their creativity to express themselves. And then there are people who feel like they don't necessarily have to do that.
Jeffrey Brown. He's probably quite the epitome of indie darling. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like he is like Mr.
what's her name from. I was listening to the show you were on.
Slumber Party. Yes.
I can't think of her name. Not Molly.
Molly, Wendy? Avi, or Wendy.
Wendy.
Okay. Yeah. Wendy.
Thank you. She'll kill me for not remembering her
name. Oh, my God. Here she is now.
But she was not afraid.
Down. They totally shoot people
God,
down.
Damn.
Oh, God. They're brutal. I was afraid to open my mouth. I mean, God, you bitches.
What I was saying about Jeffrey was, I mean, the guy could be that prototypical
Paul.
like hipster
right.
douchebag. I'm an indie comic, and Jeffrey is like one of the nicest, most unassuming guy. Unless you start talking shit about the Red Wings,
and I will the next time I see him.
January 22nd,
trust me,
I
will be
together.
Talking shit about how his Red Wings got bumped out of the playoffs and my Blackhawks won a Stanley Cup.
I think he'll be talking
because I think the last thing he said about it was, "Well, I guess you know you got to really play in the playoffs."
I think the last thing he said was, "You can borrow it for a year."
Yeah, right. Yeah, whatever. So.
But
yeah.
No, Jeffrey is exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. It's all on the inside with him. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have an air of about him.
Right.
And you know, like you would maybe unfortunately suspect from from sometimes.
You know, and is. Either way, I mean, either way is cool. It's just much more work. I always figured it was much more work to express yourself externally. You know, because you have to, you know, just...
Constantly work at it.
Constantly work at it, you know?
Well, I mean, like,
I can't get two sides of a business card printed. I mean...
I mean, ultimately, don't you want to express yourself on the page?
Absolutely. You know? That's what counts for me. That's you know, that's totally... where I've always wanted to count more on the page and less outwardly. I mean, outwardly, I've had so many different phases in my life. You know,
sure.
I periods where I really tried to conform to certain things. Actually, the first time I really tried to conform something, I almost ended up destroying it. And that's when I realized that I even though I kind of have this image of myself. I know deep down I am just a solid, debaser, an anarchist. You know, it's like this show. You know, it's like, what business do I have calling a show other than the fact that I was able to call a show? You know, and it's the same thing that got me. And this is what I'm kind of reliving now. This exhibit is sort of like I had this problem. And I used to be in the Air Force, and I kind of had the same knack for realizing that I had a certain resources at my fingertips that I could just like, you know, sign.
Oh, this is getting ready to go. This is getting ready to go in a dark fucking place.
Don't.
Isn't it?
The statute of limitations up for whatever you're about to?
Absolutely, it is. But you know, what's funny is this is why
Tony with his press the red fucking button story, isn't it?
But the you know in I realized you know it's just like there are resources here there are personnel here you know
Jesus like, what were you thinking
well
you're gonna invade like
we can take a small island
I'm afraid they looked at what I was doing and kind of thought this is where this guy's going with this he's gonna go off the map he's gonna go off the reservation all I tried to do was start the largest ski club on the East Coast that's all I tried to do that was the last thing I tried to do before they asked me to leave. So,
ski club.
Yes.
What the hell's that got to do with the Air Force?
Because
that's what they're fucking asking.
Exactly. That's exactly it. What is this?
I'm surprised they didn't send you to Alaska.
Oh Lord.
You like the snow, motherfucker? Oh, here you go.
Seriously.
Oh, Bering Strait for you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, I lucked out there, but yeah, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. So, yeah, I am. What is it? J.G. Ballard, the sci-fi writer, said, "If you want to do something really well, you kind of have to have a degree of contempt for it in order to break it down and put it back together again in a manner that you would think is fresh in your own." So I always there's always that part of the creative process is destroying something. So
now, I mean, do you think he meant contempt for the medium or contempt for what is happening in it now?
Because I think both.
Because you see that so much. You've seen that. I mean, you know, you go back to any great writer, great artist, not any, but a lot of them.
Alan Moore.
Well, but I mean, there's been many feuds between writers, between artists, you know, not in comics necessarily, in comics, but you know, in any sort of literature, especially, you've had so many writers that have battles back and forth, that kind of thing, and you know, that is sort of like, don't you think you have to sort of have a belief in yourself that you can do it better than what's being done in order to do it?
Right, kind of thing? But also, this also the trap, you know, you don't want to kid yourself, you know, to thinking, oh, I'm great, or you know, my shit doesn't stink. You sort of have to know that, you know.
I'm shitty, but I'm not as shitty as this guy.
Right. Yeah, there's that. But it's like, you know, maybe, yeah, it's a strange chemistry. Yeah, when you were just talking about feuds. I just found out recently that my favorite cinematic coupling, which is Toshirô Mifune and Kurosawa, you know, those great samurai films. Mifune is the actor, you know, the one that...
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
The one that John Belushi, what character, you know, parody on SNL.
He play in this? He was the Seventh Samurai?
Yes.
He's the big sort of...
Yeah, with a big sword. Yeah, it was like the drunkard.
If this keeps going on, I'm going to have to leave you guys alone.
Well, I know that because I don't have the knowledge that Tony has about films.
Oh, you love those movies, though.
Well, I know I do, but I don't have the memory. I don't have... But this is I knew what he was talking about.
The classic pairing in the new wave of Japanese cinema. It turns out that they were actually feuding
really?
For their last four films, and Mifune walked away from the collaboration. I had no idea.
Do you know what the last four films were?
Well, Redbeard was the last film that they did.
Okay.
And then before that was High and Low.
Okay, I've
which
seen
is,
that.
Yeah, and then... And then I think the last two samurai films.
Were the... no kidding.
Yeah, so it's like...
Well, it is. I think, I mean...
Well,
I
the guy, you know, the guy I had mentioned earlier, Werner Herzog. I mean, with...
Oh, yeah.
The classic, they even made a documentary of it, you know, My Fiend. It's the actor in like Fitzcarraldo and Aguirre.
Kinski.
Klaus Kinski. Yes. Klaus Kinski. Famous battles between these guys. Mm-hmm. Well, Kinski was fucking insane.
Of course. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, it just I think in a lot of endeavors,
friction.
It's yeah, you know, it's
sparks
it's
create
iron, heat, iron, heat, yeah, iron sharpens iron.
I don't know the line. Yeah, whatever the line is, but
yeah.
Well, hey, you know. Maybe this is a little over the top, but you know, like Hitchcock, you know, wished that he didn't have to have actors talk.
Yeah,
I mean, he sort of, you know, he wished that he could go back to the silent era because he just wanted them to stand there and look pretty and do
exactly.
what he fucking told them to do.
Yeah,
he didn't want any thought. You know,
he said actors are cattle.
Yeah,
actors
are cattle. That's how he felt about it. He hated actors.
Sure, Jimmy Stewart appreciated that. Okay,
you know, maybe Jimmy was an exception.
Maybe he didn't mind how he talked. That's why he used him so much. But I think that's an important part of the creative process. God knows, on this show, we've had our moments.
Yeah,
we've had our differences.
Well, we usually use it as fodder for the show, though.
That's true, and it's made for great shows. You know, I hope.
It's hell, I had, you know, our hosts here. I had a fight with Patrick earlier in the week already.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's, you know, part of it is just me and my personality. Well,
that's why we had
very...
the Chipotle waiting for us.
No.
But you know, in comics, you look at, you know, what are some of the great feuds? You know, obviously, you know, Byrne Claremont was kind of famous that those guys would butt heads.
Sure.
Oh,
sure.
Well, Roy
Lee and Steve Ditko, isn't that another?
Yeah,
famous
that led to Ditko basically leaving Marvel.
I don't know who else. Why didn't I say Steve Bissett in someone, but I don't know who.
Steve Rude, just about anybody.
Rude and Baron.
Yeah, they.
You know, it's
they were insane,
you know, still,
together.
But I mean, there are some great, you know, great collaborations.
I think you can work for a short amount, period of time, but at some point, it's like, how can you? You know, it's like hard to.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think these guys are so passionate about what they're doing, and I think whenever you get like these uber creative and passionate people, they also become you know, perfectionists. And
yes.
I think there's a certain amount of control freak that mm-hmm. gets into that, to, you know, a perfection, you know, of your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're collaborating with someone, and there's magic that can happen in great collaborations.
Of course.
But if you're a perfectionist and you're a control freak, like most of these uber creative people are, that can only work for so long.
It can only work for so long. Yeah. I was contacted by this guy who's making the Rude documentary. Do you know about this?
No, but I'll watch it.
Oh, God. Oh, he's based in New York. I can't recall his name right now. It's Adrian something. Anyway, he's...
Same guys that did the Morrison documentary.
I told him they should.
I told that guy that they
should do a Steve Rude and Mike Baron documentary.
Oh, God.
There's actually a clip available, and he's going around getting interviews.
No, it's probably not them, because I don't think they would have done it that quickly. But
yeah, so I...
No, it's an interesting story. Those guys, I mean, you know, Steve, one of the most talented illustrators ever to draw comics, I think.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And the stuff they did together was amazing, but their story is something else. I mean, it's just got ups and downs and twists and turns. I'm a huge Steve Rude.
I remember on 11 o'clock, we were talking about illustrators, and Rude came up, and I said, oh, you know, he's no Wally Wood. And I went back into the office the next day, and you're like, oh, we need to talk.
I think Rude is I would call him a master of the form, in my opinion. I think the guy can draw anything he wants and is amazing. But that's just my opinion. I'm no expert. So.
He's consummate.
I wish he had better business sense.
Perfectionist, yeah. You get the sense from the clip of this documentary that it's especially for a creator, there's that pain is there. You know, that you know, God, I've got all this. Why can't I make this over here gel? And it might be difficult to watch. And I'm debating on being interviewed for it because, we have very little in common. I mean, I we've worked for the same company. We have the same art director. I filled in on Nexus for a while. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I doubt if he even knows who I am, but I do remember when I first started working for First Publishing, who was publishing
here in Chicago.
Here in Chicago,
Badger and Nexus.
And walking into the LaSalle Street offices and just people from production coming out to the hallway and gathering around this flat file where Alex Wald, who's the art director there, who's in the show, was unwrapping this package. And you open this package, and it's the smell of linseed oil just wafting up out of this. And he set it up to dry because it was a cover for Nexus that Rood had just
painted
and mailed down from Wisconsin where he lived. And the thing is, it's glistening, and it was beautiful. I mean, and that was the first Steve Rood piece I ever saw. You know,
His paintings are amazing.
Yeah, they are. I mean,
no, and it is. I mean, just recently, you know, he's gone through financial troubles, mm-hmm. and almost lost his house.
Saved the house.
And yeah. Was able to save it. And
yeah.
Unfortunately, he's one of those guys that is just like incredibly talented, and for whatever reason, just can't. Get out of his own way, really be as successful as he should be.
I was just giving that advice to someone because that is my own problem. Is getting you got to get the fuck out of your own way sometimes because you are your biggest challenge,
mm-hmm.
your own biggest challenge, your own biggest hurdle. So, and some guys can do it really, really well. Are fortunate to have the work discipline, the financial gain, and the support to make that happen.
I think Steve left comics for a while, mm-hmm. and when he came back, I think he thought that comics or the comics industry was the same as it was before he left, and it changed a lot in the time that he was away. And it's we can go on and on, mm-hmm. about it, but he's an amazing talent,
yes.
and I hope that people go and buy the Nexus archives
seriously.
Which
it's worth it.
God, I want that stuff to come out and trade at some point.
I think they're doing the soft covers now.
God, I hope so.
I think they're doing soft covers now, but I think you have to buy them from him. I don't know. I mean, it's a weird,
Fine.
I don't know. But yeah, he's definitely one of those guys. It's really unfortunate that he's had the struggles that he had because as far as talent, I mean, the guy can do anything he wants.
Yeah, he can.
He's like one of those guys, but...
There's a lot of people that worked on Nexus. I saw Garcia Lopez pages from Nexus, which kind of shocked me a little bit. I didn't know that he worked, but you had worked on it for a while.
Yeah, I sat in on two or three issues. I was doing one of my favorite things I like to do in private, which is Googling myself.
You were Google baiting,
and because I was looking for a piece of art, and. The Nexus stuff popped up on some database. I'm like, in its interior pages. And I follow another link, and I'm still shocked by this. I did the covers for the issues. It's like, I never do my own covers. It's very, very rare. But I always consider it, wow, I got to do Nexus. That's pretty cool. That'll always be like a high point. So I'm always amazed to see... fact that first let me do covers, it's like, wow, okay, I can do covers,
I can draw.
Sure.
Why is it Chicagoland? How come there hasn't a publisher can't survive here?
Because they tried. There's a few of them, man.
Let me tell you,
there's been a bunch of them. There's a ton of talent here.
First,
was Kamiko?
First Kamiko, now. And then more recently is Devil's Due.
And it just can't seem to.
God knows there's enough.
There's enough talent here. I think it's. I think it's the internal decisions of publishers. I think it's how they run their business. I think, in truth, the going back to the gallery show, people have asked, why are you doing this? I'm like, oh. I was asked, and it was a challenge, and so over the course of 4 months, I had to sort of think of an ulterior motive. Why am I doing this show? Someone's going to ask me, and just being selfless or feeling like I'm doing it for the creators in the city, that seems too altruistic. So I think what it comes down to, I did it because I wanted to get Threadless on board as a sponsor.
Oh, the t-shirt company.
Yeah,
sure.
The t-shirt company, because I think in the back of my mind, and I'm still going to try to play this card if if you guys are listening. I think Threadless should, you know, invest in small publishing.
Publishing house here in Chicago?
Here in Chicago.
Yeah, because they're Chicago-based, right?
Yeah, they're Chicago-based, yeah. And it has to be done right. I think it's not a... and it's going back to a contempt of something that you love. You have to, like, look at it, take it apart, and put it back together again. And I think it should be, you know, they publish something that should be sort of like a small press sort of thing where they do acquire a single volume of something that'll sit and sell on a shelf constantly. Use that as
evergreen,
as a basic.
Evergreen product.
Yes.
Yeah,
exactly. And then,
well, let's just put a Kickstarter campaign together. Chris and I will start a publishing company and we'll just raise, like, what do you think? $5 million on Kickstarter?
Hey, if Tony Harris is asking for what, $60,000 or whatever it is, you know, $5 million.
Sure.
I don't know what it wouldn't even take that much, honestly, to do one volume of something. That's, you know, and you sell that enough to.
Yeah, because, you know, you hear the story about how Marvel lost the Conan license, Conan the Barbarian, and it's like they had to do is, like, keep shit in print. And pay the estate $1 a year, you know, and they fell off the
and
they
somehow
fell off
they
the
forgot
way.
To do that.
Yeah. And then now Dark Horse is running
that?
With it. How do you
good
do
for
that?
Them?
Yeah,
because I tell you what, the Dark Horse stuff that has been coming out is fucking nice.
Awesome.
It's really nice.
Thundercats. Who owns Thundercats? Can we get that? I don't know.
I don't know who owns Thundercats. It's...
I thought I heard somebody was actually doing Thundercats, but
it should. Yeah. It probably, I would say, like, IDW. It sounds like, you know, some IDW
someone
ad
was,
or Boom.
I know a lot of people have problems with IDW art. They like the properties, but they're having problems with
on some of the, on some of the titles, but some of the titles. Hey, man, Lock and Key with Gabriel Rodriguez,
oh,
I think, is about the most beautiful book
that.
On the stands.
I love
man.
That.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's seriously.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he is awesome. The guy's just, he's so... Rich, I do. It's
Robert Atkins is still doing really nice stuff with G.I. Joe and Antonio Fusa. Done like the Cobra, the G.I. Joe Cobra stuff. Mm-hmm. I really like his stuff mm-hmm. a lot. What are some of the other IDW titles out there?
I don't know. Is American Vampire IDW?
No, that's Vertigo.
Oh. I don't even know. I'm so.
Is it Vertigo? Oh, yeah, it is.
It's Vertigo. Yeah.
Oh, so I tell you, at New York Comic Con, you go to the DC booth, and the Vertigo area was a huge American fan. I mean, Vertigo, that's their. I think that's their flagship
fucking
title.
Vampires.
I think it's their flagship title at Vertigo right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I think that Fables has slowed down a little bit.
It's ending. He doesn't care anymore. He's got his splash pages to sell.
It's like, you know, Dark Horse is all over me.
They want
you to they're like
and,
all over me.
What are you doing
there's
after Jack of Fables?
Do you have
anything lined up, or are you just kind of?
I will tell you. You read the news, and they are like they want me on a particular title, and I can't talk about it.
Ooh.
But it would be so fun.
Everybody,
boy, huh?
What?
Yeah, they're getting ready, Mike. They're kicking Mike up
anymore.
Mignola, you're washed up.
He hasn't drawn it in years. He draws the covers. That's all he draws. He doesn't draw the damn book anymore. It's Richard Corbin and
Fregredo.
Yeah. Duncan's awesome.
God,
yeah. Duncan
Fregredo's so,
awesome. Yeah.
God, his art's expensive.
So I'm on the.
Okay.
So
and,
they want
Guy
they
Davis.
Want you on something.
Yeah,
and,
they want me
and
major over there. And everybody, I've
you don't
want to
do
them.
It.
I want to do it.
Well,
I'm just,
so what's the problem?
Well, they
we can't make this love connection.
They haven't made the official
right offer.
Of
the right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. It's so. And I'm talking to. Man.
The Buffy.
Le Buffy. So I'm talking to my editor, and I'm like, you know, come on, give me some, because Dark Horse is like on me for
so
for
with
something.
Vertigo, with Jack ending, mm-hmm. you're not like signed exclusive to Vertigo
no,
or anything,
no,
right?
They,
so you're a free agent, you can
I'm
go
a free
and do
agent,
whatever you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's like the devil you know.
Right,
you
right,
know,
sure,
so.
Sure. No the Marvel devil. Interest for you? Would there be
oh,
anything?
Oh, yeah, I love Marvel books. Actually, yeah. I like Marvel books.
I remember you saying that before.
Yeah,
you were
yeah. The DC books, the culture there is different, obviously. It's like they're more capes and Marvel's less cape. But it's also the way the books are put together. The DC books just seem so dense to me. You know, I open a book up and it's just like a wall of noise. And it's, I'm sure, you know, it... Fans love it. I would like to see something else. I like a little more air.
Sure.
In my book.
I agree
so
with
I was
you.
Like,
I mean, especially the last year or so. I mean, a lot of the titles have been, you know, like the Green Lantern stuff is just so packed full of art, and it's like, and the colors, and it's just like, honestly, I get to the point where it's just like, I look at something, I'm like, I don't want to read that. I don't want to have to force my eyes to try and figure out what the hell is going on.
He doesn't mean
book.
That, Molly
you know,
Jane.
I do.
He doesn't mean it, Molly Jane.
I saw the greatest.
I'm sorry,
greatest,
Doug Mankey. I'm sorry.
And I love Doug and Christian on that book.
And Ivan Rice. I mean, it's like, you know.
But
it's
hey, man, you know, the writer says there's going to be 12 characters on this page. There's going to be 12 characters on that page.
Yeah.
But, Phil Hester had an awesome tweet today. He said,
really?
If
Phil Hester had an awesome tweet. That's
an awesome
very
tweet.
Rare.
Ah, Phil's awesome. Tweet. Phil's awesome.
Didn't say he wasn't awesome, but his tweets are
great. Sad. I love following Phil.
Sad Kansas City Chiefs fan. He's just gonna be so disappointed when they get steamrolled by the Ravens this weekend. Ray Lewis may hurt someone bad.
I love the way you guys, you know, hold someone up, but then find flaw in their choice of sports team. Oh, God.
It's like we all have Jewish mothers, man.
Andy Plenty.
Oh, no. Phil, not Andy.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Phil. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But Phil, and you're an artist, so let me know if you agree with this. Said if you want to see if you're...
Phil is
being a good if you want to see how well your storytelling is, take a finished page and shrink it down to 2x3
thumbnail.
and see if you can follow the action.
Oh, sweet!
Which I thought was I'm an art director, so I'm like so I can visualize that. I'm like, okay, yeah, if you shrink something down that small and if you can still follow the action, I guess that's a pretty
just squint at it.
Pretty good
actually,
indicator.
That belies my brilliance because I start at 2x3. I do thumbnails that
thumbnail.
Size.
Yeah. So does he. So does Phil.
All right.
Phil
does,
he's a big thumbnail guy.
Okay. Yeah. I'm huge into thumbnails. People are like, why do you do that for editorial? I mean, you're the artist. You say, well, first off, it just helps me with the process. I've always done it. I'm very methodical. So that's brilliant. 2x3.
He's a great storyteller. Yeah. I can't wait for his Godzilla. He and Eric Powell, who does the Goon.
Yeah.
Powell is writing and Phil is drawing Godzilla, which is going to be awesome. I can't wait.
So what would you do at Vertigo if they offered, like, what would be something you'd want to do at Vertigo? What about you just find a writer and just come up with something, you know?
Yeah, I'd do that too. I don't, you know, yeah. I mean, I finding a writer, actually, shit.
What?
That's right. Somebody approached me. Oh, God, I got to talk to Robert Rohde.
Wow.
I forgot. Somebody approached me about something.
Oh, there you go.
Robert, get back to me.
He doesn't listen to this show. You have way too much respect for our little podcast, Tony.
So, okay, there's something right there.
Somebody
happen.
Contacted you and wants to work, do something together, maybe do something at Vertigo
exactly.
together.
Yeah, yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, it's really weird.
Does that work differently? I mean, would that work differently than, say, you came onto Jack of Fables. That was an established thing, you know,
Fables,
with the character, Fables.
Yeah, with Fables. The Jack of Fables was a new, you know, as a spinoff.
Jack was
but
an
you
existing character.
But you didn't create the character.
No. No.
So, like, if you and a writer came up with something original and went to Vertigo, would your deal be different because of that?
Yeah, post Diane Nelson, after the restructuring, the deals are completely different now.
Oh, yeah.
Good or
worse?
They're worse.
They're worse. Yeah. The creator deals are not as favorable.
That's not smart.
Yeah, I know, but it's just the sign of the times. You know, you. My understanding from someone who's very, very much on the outside of things, as far as, you know, policy and
you weren't talking to John Suntress again, were you?
No, I wasn't. You know, it's all about the bottom line, which, you know, comics forever has always been about the bottom line, but
it's a profit business.
Yeah.
It's profit business, but now, you know, the operative word is transmedia. So now it means, okay, the comic has to be
how do we get a movie deal out of it?
A movie deal. Yeah. Actually, I was talking to someone I'm not going to name, but is you know, he's a heavy hitter, a writer, and he was telling me that
after the writers' conference in first week of September last year, mm-hmm. where they were kind of like hashing stuff out, the writers' conference at DC, the cultural shift there, the editorial shift in policy post Diane Nelson, the restructuring, there is a what's his name?
I can't read your mind, man. I don't have that.
The guy in the water, the fish guy.
Aquaman?
Aquaman, yes. So it was an Aquaman story.
The fish guy.
The fish guy.
Well, you know, I can understand.
But the fish. It was an Aquaman story that would have never, never gotten greenlit as a comic, but it got pushed through because it's going to make a great movie.
God, really?
Yeah.
Is that a good thing?
I don't know. Is that a bad thing? Is that a good thing? What does that mean? You know what I mean? Like,
is the world ready for an Aquaman movie?
Well, no. I mean, here's the thing. Like, we always... You said, you know, the word transmedia, and mm-hmm. we all went, oh! You know what I mean? That's the instant reaction mm-hmm. to that concept of, like, we can't just tell stories anymore because it has to be something that has to cross over to different mediums.
Right.
Because we're trying... Realistically, we're trying to keep this business alive.
Right.
I mean, mm-hmm. I'm sure. saying we as... people that are actually
the industry.
Yeah, the industry. Yeah. And we roll our eyes at it, and we immediately think that it's a harmful thing to the industry. I'm not saying it isn't.
Well,
it is,
I don't think it's a harmful thing to the industry, but I buy comics to read comics. I don't buy comics because I hope that it will eventually make a good movie.
Right.
No, but what difference, right. as a comic book reader, what difference mm-hmm. does it make to you if you don't know?
None.
Okay.
But so the problem is you read enough of them?
No.
You
no.
read
how
enough?
How many comics okay. do you think you've probably read that have been under the same sort of guise, the same proclamation, that you don't even know?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
That's what I'm saying.
A lot.
You
and
think
more and
maybe
more all the time.
We sit there as comic book fans mm-hmm. and sit there and go, oh, geez, this is going to make them make... They're just going to make worse stories out of it because
right.
they don't give a shit about the comic book stories. They're just making movies. They just want to make movies. That's all they care about.
I really like American
Vampire.
The guy that's writing
the comic is still mm-hmm. gives a shit about the story he's telling.
Of course.
The guy who's writing that Aquaman story, he still gives a shit. That writer still cares
right.
about his story.
Right. He just didn't know that it was, you know, prior to the culture that's presently in DC, he didn't know that if it wasn't for the present culture, that story would have been axed a year ago. But now,
right,
because
okay.
of the present culture, it's...
To him, it's a good thing. I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to defend it necessarily. I'm just giving
right.
it a devil's advocate.
It is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is, unfortunately. And or fortunately, or I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, well, we're talking about, you know, American Vampire. Vertigo is all behind American Vampire.
Right.
From you know, their con presence and the advertising mm-hmm. and all that.
I fell off after four issues.
It may be because it's being written to be turned into an HBO series. I don't know,
yeah.
but you know that has to be part of what they're thinking with that. You know, it's
so
because you're right. Everything is transmedia.
Yeah.
You know?
So yeah, I mean, I don't know. How does it affect the story that's being written on the page?
I don't know. It could be. I mean, because, you know, if I'm writing.
I mean, we always imagine, like, editors sitting there going, no, we have to change this. We have to interject, you know, Scrappy-Doo into the Scooby-Doo because, you know, we want
right.
kids to like it. You know,
right.
that's what we're imagining. And certainly
that's
those
kind
things,
of where we are, you know, sort of like where cartoons prior to cartoons in the 1940s, I guess, you know, Bugs Bunny, things like that. You sat down as adults, and you could get the jokes, you know, the blue jokes, the things that, you know,
the adults put
the 35 to 40 year old guys who were making
right.
the Bugs Bunny movies and drinking beer were putting in, but
and
then,
they edited all those out now.
Yeah, I know. But then you get to the Hanna-Barbera age where, you know, it's just, oh, cartoons are for kids now, so you
right.
have to have Bugs Bunny have a little nephew who's cute and gets into trouble.
The Animaniacs,
I think Animaniacs was bringing that back because that shit is
funny. Yeah, Animaniacs kind
of. I'm not saying it isn't funny.
Of,
well, yeah, okay,
it wasn't this commodification, and I wanted to touch on that point too about artists. Just like
what was the little green guy in the front Flintstone?
Kazoo.
Yeah, kazoo. Kazoo. But you know what? When I was a kid, I loved kazoo.
Kazoo was, I know.
You know what I mean?
Kazoo was like, as,
yeah, you know.
I wanted to see more of Ann Margrock.
What was that? I was watching something.
I was watching some
fuck
show.
Kazoo. Where's Ann Margrock?
I knew it was Ann Margaret, even though it was a cartoon.
I wanted to see Kazoo and Ann Margaret.
That's how hot Ann Margaret was, is even as a cartoon.
Even as a Flintstone.
Yeah, even as a Flintstone, she was still hot.
Seriously.
I was, watching, some, I don't know what it was, some show. I was watching a sitcom or something, and somebody brings up the phrase, it jumped the shark. And you know, and somebody, and the guy goes, you know what? That phrase is based on a show where a guy actually jumped a shark, and it was awesome.
It was.
Oh my god!
It's like everybody, that's become the common phrase. Of, right. You know, when a show goes bad,
exactly.
You know, it's jumped the shark. But you know what? When I was watching Happy Days, and Fonzie jumped that shark on those skis, right. It was awesome.
Well, it was awesome, and it was all downhill after that.
Yeah. Well, Arrested Development. You know, you see Henry Winkler do that again on Arrested Development.
Did he really?
Yeah, it was like in the
oh, that's right.
Yeah, in the last season where it was like it was the Burger King episode where they were endorsing Burger King left and right, and oh, that is a good burger.
Yeah.
And they're at the dock because they wanted they caught the shark that bit the flipper off. Yeah. And the shark's there on the dock, and Henry Winkler says, "Well, I'm hungry. I gotta go to Burger King to get breakfast." And it's a wide shot, and he hops over the shark and goes and walks off camera. It's like.
That's funny. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I understand that the immediate response to something that is that it's a bad thing for comics. But I don't know. I just think on some level it's still going to be a writer and an artist creating a comic book.
Right. I think sometimes it just either is or it isn't. And sometimes I think that you can try and make something into something. You know, it's like whenever Robert Kirkman and Tony Moore sat down to do Walking Dead, were they thinking we need to make this a very transmedia comic?
Probably. I bet at some point in Robert Kirkman's head, he was thinking, you know what? I don't know that he wrote the story specifically to be made into a television show, but I bet at somewhere in his brain, he as a writer, he was sitting there thinking, you know, I'd like this to be a TV show.
Sure,
I'd like this to be, you know.
Well, I think because that's who we are. I mean, we grew up watching Twilight Zone serials. And so
I think as a creative person, I mean, part of being a creative, part of making art, I would imagine is you want people to see it and like it, right? And you
absolutely
want the most amount of people to see it and the most amount of people to like it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're creating, you know, I don't think Tony and Robert sat down and said, well, how do we make this so that it, you know, makes a movie,
right?
But I don't know the last time that I read, you know, I don't know the last time I read a comic book and went, gee, that just wasn't very good because they were trying to make a television show out of it. I mean, there's been ones that are like that, but they are pretty blatant about it. They, you know, Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah.
They were up front. Hey, we're trying to make movies.
Oh, who is that?
This is a pitch for a movie. This
who's
is, you
the
know
company
what I mean?
Now that is like really
radical?
Radical. Thank you. Really tied into this company exists because we are clearing. You know, this is pre-production.
We're making comics as movie pitches.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: it doesn't matter what you're writing it for. A good story is a good story. It doesn't matter if it's for film. It's for if it's you know, I'm writing the story and I'm thinking about it being a TV show. I'm thinking about it being a movie. I'm thinking about being a comic book, a novel, whatever. It still comes down to whether it's a good story or not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's
right.
And at some point, the writer is either going to make a good story.
Yeah.
Or the writer and artist, is going to make a good story or not make a good story. That's all.
A monthly comic book, by its nature, should make a good TV show. It's episodic storytelling.
Hey, and I read a lot of shitty comic books that were made specifically to be comic books. Just because it's the purity of I'm just making this because I love comics.
You're right.
Doesn't mean you can't make a shitty comic out of that.
There's plenty of those out there.
And I think possibly because we're talking about comics with DC, with Time Warner on a corporate level, on such a huge level. That idea that, you know, these books have to turn a profit. These books, in order to turn a profit to be viable in today's market, have to tie themselves to an end result, which is a profit.
Toys and T-shirts.
Exactly. So I think, and there are certainly companies, smaller companies, that don't do that at all. And I think,
who doesn't do that anymore?
I don't know. I'm sure there aren't.
They're around. I don't think they are. I mean,
well, you know, okay, then this, like, there are creators who think, oh, I love comics, and I'm just going to do this because I love the medium. I love, you know, collaboration. It's like, you know, I think that I love technology. You know, and I love, you know, the Wacom tablet. I love the Cintiq. And
right.
I love, but they are tools, and I'm always on the fence about when an artist turns to a Cintiq and produces solely digital work, because for me, and I'm not saying I'm never going to do it. I recognize it as a production tool. But for me, the high wire act, and I probably talked about this before, the high wire act in comics is where the inker obliterates the pencil.
You know, there's no coming back from it.
You know, this is like, you know, it's like you're it's like the war wagon with Kirk Douglas. You know,
right.
You got the nitroglycerin. Or, you know, and if you don't do it right, it's going to blow up in your face.
The timer's click, cut, the
yeah,
counting down.
Exactly.
And if you don't cut the red wire or the blue wire,
right.
You know, which wire? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's the high wire act for me in comics.
But at the same time, I mean, isn't it just sort of shortening up the correction time? I mean, even with that, there's still ways to correct things.
Yes. Yes.
But I will say this. I mean, you see it over and over again, and I'm sure you've experienced it as an artist, where you try and do something, and you fuck it up, and it creates something cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You know,
I create cool shit every day, man.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And so it's like, with digital, and I don't know if you get the same, you know, that same chance,
yeah.
That same game of chance.
Yeah,
of,
that's definitely what it is.
Yeah.
You know, because with, you know, with a page that's penciled and then passed to an inker, I will, you know, two or three pages out of a year, I'll get called by an editor and says, you know, we need to change this panel. You have a piece of art that has a changed panel on it.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, you do that patch, you know,
right.
And it's just like you're, you know, you measure the panel, you redraw something, you just like slap it on there. And
I have no idea why they did that. There was an editorial decision on this page. It's a Raphael Albuquerque page.
Oh, right, right.
And it's the original panel is Batman drop-kicking Little Batman.
It's stunning.
From the Little Leaguers. He's drop-kicking Little Batman into a dumpster. And apparently someone had a problem with that.
Why?
And so the patch panel
is Batman kicking a kid, basically.
And the patch panel is him smacking him in the face.
Batman can kick kids?
Okay, I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I can see this as the reason. Putting a kid in a dumpster.
Okay, yeah.
I mean, babies being left in dumpsters sort of thing. Maybe that was the thought process.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe, as opposed to smacking a kid. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows what the, you know.
So the message from DC is okay to punch the shit out of your kids.
Yes.
Just don't put them in a dumpster
don't
afterwards.
Kick them into dumpsters. It didn't matter as much anymore.
Oh,
they separated from AIM. That was Hydra.
It's not the Hydra. Hydrox cookies.
The kosher Cokes. This is the time of year when they had the kosher Cokes out. I keep missing it because they use natural sugar in
natural cane. Oh God! You want if you're ever in Oak Brook, there's a hamburger place called Tom. No. Tom and Eddie's, I think it's called, and it's two guys that were like. They worked for McDonald's. They were like vice presidents of McDonald's. They went and started their own burger place. Burgers are good. They're like gourmet burgers, that kind of thing, whatever. Kind of overpriced. They're good. But if you go there, they have a soda machine of this soda company in New York. You can't get this. I looked. You can't get the stuff anywhere other than like on the East Coast. And it's all made with natural cane sugar. And there's like cream soda, orange soda. There's like five or six different kinds there. And
They're awesome.
I highly recommend them.
Okay.
I don't even like soda that much, but those were pretty tasty.
Where is this again?
It's in Oak Brook Mall.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called Tom and Eddie's.
Okay.
Is the burger place.
And,
no, not Ed. Shut up, Hank. So what were we talking about?
Journalism and comics.
Journalism. Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And,
the article
and kosher Oreos.
Kosher Hydrox with the kosher Oreos. No, I read an article. I don't remember who wrote it now. It doesn't say here in my notes. Christopher Butcher? Chris Butcher, I think is his name. He owns a store. He runs TCAF, the Toronto Comics and Arts Festival.
Oh, yeah, which I hear is a very, very nice show.
He wrote an article the other day called The Comics Journalism Conundrum, which I thought was really an interesting article, and it was sort of, to really paraphrase it, Don, I recommend that you go read it if you're interested in this at all, but to paraphrase what he was saying was that people always complain about comics journalism because too many of the websites that cover comics
regurgitate press releases.
Cover mainstream comics. And his point was like, well, that's the case, but there's plenty of stuff out there for indie comics. Yes, it's not the majority, but how can you blame these people? That's what people want to read. To get the page views, you have to cover what people are interested in, and the majority of people that are interested in comics are interested in mainstream comics. Like it or not, that is what it is. And like I said, I'm really heavily...
Well, the crux of it was is that, hey, if you're going to have journalism in comics, then you have to pay writers. And if you're going to pay writers, then you have to sell ads. And if you're going to sell ads, you have to have page views.
Right.
And if you're going to have page views, well, you know what? You can't do a story on Duncan the Wonder Dog coming out from
Ad House.
You have to do a story on the Green Lantern trailer.
Right.
That's the conundrum.
That is the conundrum. If you want journalism, they have to cover the top stories. Otherwise, it just won't exist. I mean, there won't be any journalism, unless you'll have fanzines. Basically, you'll have which you have a lot of that as it is. But yeah, I mean, it's just it is what it is. It's that double-edged sword of like, well, you want people to talk about what we're doing in comics, but you don't want them to talk about the stuff that the majority of the people are actually interested in. In seeing or reading or buying,
in a weird way, and talking from our bubble of podcasting, as we would track our downloads back in the day, we would put out an episode that would say Creator X, Chris, we talk with Chris Burnham,
right?
Not that Chris Burnham isn't a good draw, but then on one episode. We from a joke that Tom had, we called it 90% Kirby. And that was from this offhanded comment that he had made.
Right.
And we made that the title of the episode. And our downloads went up like 20% because that was the name of the title.
Right.
And so it's, I think that's the whole point is that you put something out there and you find a theme or a thread that attracts people to view and, Blackest Night or whatever, and you're gonna. That's what those sites do is that they find ways to maximize their page views.
Yeah,
and that's.
I mean, you see it in any type of journalism. It's not just comics journalism. I mean, turn on
right.
Turn
watch
on
the news.
Yeah, watch the news. Look at the newspapers. I mean, it's just it is what it is. Unfortunately, but I think it always comes down to like, well, there's like this disconnect between what people really do and what we say we do. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know if I talked about this before, but there was a study about about movies, and like they would give people a box of movies basically, and you would select
three
of them, and one of them you had to watch tomorrow, one of them you had to watch a week from now, and one of them you had to watch like a month from now or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And inevitably, people would always pick like one, comedy, one action movie, and then, like, something highbrow.
It was all, like, Schindler's List and Shawshank Redemption, and those were the...
They would pick them.
Yeah.
And they would pick them for their third week.
I've actually been in that study.
And they... Oh, really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
I picked...
You watched Dumb and Dumber the first day, didn't you?
Well, actually, I picked this Orderly, Cinderfella, and Artisan, all Jerry Lewis movies.
Hey, lady!
But people would pick like the real quick, you know, action stuff, the, you know, easy to digest kind of stuff. But they would pick the more dense, you know, important works because they knew they should watch
they should,
them.
Yeah.
But right. Like 80% of the people would right. put it on the month. You know, they had to watch it a month from now, and they never would.
Right.
And it's the same thing with like your Netflix queue.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
everybody says that they want journalism in comics. And,
but nobody will read it.
And if you want to find out exactly how many people really do want journalism in comics, look at how many copies are sold of the Comics Journal.
Right, absolutely. Mm. I mean, that's right. that's about yeah. as intensive.
Yeah. Right there.
You know,
there you go.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. We all say what we want the world to be like. Yeah. But in the reality of what we actually do on a day-to-day basis is we go with what's easy, what's, you know, yeah. 9 times out of 10. It's yeah, the simple...
I'm thinking about my
Netflix queue right now.
Like, my God, how long is Knife in the Water going to sit there unwatched? You were talking about Herzog earlier. Just as a quick side note, I got distracted by... a Joy Division song the other day, and I was thinking of Ian Curtis, and I was like reading the circumstances of his death. The last movie, last film he watched the night before he hung himself was a Herzog film.
Oh, they'll do that to
good
you.
Good Lord.
Yeah. They can do that to you.
So.
Oh, crap.
Was it The Grizzly Man? Was it?
I can't remember the name of it right now.
Fitzcarraldo. Oh shit! I had.
I still haven't watched it. Phil Fitzcarraldo is in my Netflix queue. It's been there for
3 years.
Probably man. 2 years. Yeah, probably seriously
it's,
for
it's,
2 years.
It's
I,
an
I
interesting.
Haven't
it's an interesting.
Fitzcarraldo
movie.
Is the movie that Coppola watched and saw. I want to go into the jungle and go crazy while making a movie about Vietnam.
What about him? Movie in an it was the Opera House.
Opera House. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Crazy, crazy fucking movie.
Seriously.
Oh shit! What was I gonna? I had a point. I lost it.
I don't know. You lost the point.
It's about journalism?
Yeah. Oh, no. Lists. We were talking about lists.
Fuck.
It's that time of the year, yeah. folks. It's the best of lists.
I was so disappointed today when I saw Tom Caters. Not only did Tom Caters write a fucking top 10 list on iFanboy.
And Tom hates lists.
And Tom hates. He shared my hate, my love of hating lists. He wrote a top 10 list article, but not only was it a top 10 list, it was a top 10 list pandering to his listeners. And I just, it was like the day the fucking music died for me today. Tom, I just want you to know that you just kind of crushed my soul a little bit today.
I can't believe you guys got me in here on a list episode.
It's not a list. No. I hate lists. I hate
them. Oh, and this year, it even gets worse because it's the not the best of the year. Now you get the whole best of the decade.
Well, no,
oh,
yeah. You know what I heard is now
best
it's,
of the
it's best of human life. Because if you believe in the whole Mayan
oh,
calendar
right.
thing,
right.
you yeah. know, this is it.
This is it.
I literally, I shit you not, I told you about the strange New Year's Eve party I went to.
Yeah.
Were there blackbirds dropping out of the
people,
air?
No,
yeah, no shit. How about that?
Yeah, there were people there that were sort of semi-seriously saying, hey, this could be the last New Year's
you're
Eve.
See some, you're going to yeah. see some freaky shit this year because
I don't know. These people said that about Y2K too, and you didn't see shit.
I don't know.
You saw people buy
yeah,
water
is,
and
this
baked
is,
beans.
This is
and,
Mayan calendar shit.
Yeah,
you
this is Mayan calendar
that.
Shit. Yeah, I was recently in Seattle, and I had this uncanny, seriously, uncanny. Well, I didn't know it was uncanny at the time. I had a dream about being somewhere on the street, and there was an earthquake, and then a tidal wave. We had to climb up in the building, so. I
that was the movie
it.
2012.
Right.
Yeah, it was John Cusack. Was John Cusack driving you around?
Right. Well, I go to Seattle for the week of Christmas because that's, you know, where my girlfriend's from and her sisters are there. And I'm going down the streets, and these are the streets that were in my dream.
Ooh.
Right. And it was like, really? I mean, really? Come on.
Like a weird deja vu?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like uncanny. So. Got that going.
What?
Don't go back to Seattle. At the end of the year.
Exactly. And Sal and I learned whenever you're in Seattle and you go down the street, you go down.
Yeah, you gotta go back
seriously.
Up.
You go
down
the street.
Have to go back up.
No, I you the you know Seattle's at the same the same sea level as Chicago. Also, Chicago is like 430, 450.
Yeah, something like
Seattle
that.
Is 460 to zero.
Yeah.
So, when you go down the street, you walk downtown, man. Your ears pop because the pressure changes.
We walked down to Pike's Place
and
grab Seattle's a bite to eat.
Awesome.
Oh, it's a beautiful town.
Yeah.
But
cool
town.
Walking back up almost killed me.
This is before you started, Sal, for the folks that don't know, Sal's really gotten into a good physical fitness routine in the last year and a half or so.
Sure.
I think it was the Seattle trip that may have pushed you over the edge.
No, it wasn't the physical, like,
because we were walking up that hill and you were dying.
Just leave me here. Kill a squirrel, leave it with me.
No, I would probably still have a hard time doing it just because it was my knees. It wasn't like cardio-wise or like strength. Yeah. It was just my knees. It was really my knee. I have bad knees, so it was hard to. And I still do. Like, I can't run really for long because my knees just.
It was so bad. We actually stopped and had a conversation with a Greenpeace volunteer.
Yeah, just to take a break. I actually filled out just to get a fucking blow. I was just like, oh god, anything.
Tell me about the trees.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay,
save the whales. Yeah, I'll do that. Yeah.
All right.
Good lord. Did you hear Bruce Campbell is coming? Speaking of conventions, this is what we were talking about. Bruce Campbell's coming to Wizard World Chicago next year.
Or this year.
This year, yeah. I'm going now, man. Bruce Campbell.
Oh, that kind of.
I got to go see Bruce. You know he's going to be, at the Hyatt afterwards.
Right. Yeah, of course. I thought I had gone to my last Wizard World.
Why do you got to hate on Wizard World?
I'm
so
not
much?
Hating. I just
you
I,
hate you hate.
The only reason I went last year was to see you.
Yeah, you were there for like an hour.
I was there for like 3 hours. So
I only saw you for 10
minutes. I met Shaft, which was cool.
Richard Roundtree, Roundtree was there. That's right.
He's an alumnus of Southern Illinois University at Carbondale. Okay. We got to talk about
Shaft
that a little bit.
And who else?
Yeah. Bob Odenkirk.
Shaft goes to college.
That's why you like Bob Odenkirk.
That's part of the reason. Jim Belushi, Dennis Franz.
Why you gotta shit on Jim Belushi? He's the funniest living Belushi.
He is the funniest.
It's not his fault his brother died and was funnier.
There are 9 other Belushis, just so you know. And he's squeezed them all.
I got love for all the Belushis. Come on, they're local guys.
Dennis Franz, or Franz.
Dennis Franz. Franz.
Yeah.
That's what you know. Hey, have you seen the? Speaking of, I guess we're talking local stuff now. That new cop show that's going on, Chicago Code.
Yeah, the Chicago Code.
Why didn't they? First of all, why didn't it was just called the Chicago Way? Because that's what they were going for, but they couldn't go for the Chicago Way for whatever reason. So it's a Chicago Code cop show based in Chicago, right? And I'm like, how is Dennis Franz not in this show? He's an actor who was a Chicago cop for, like, I don't know, 20 years or something. Yeah. How is that guy not in that show?
Well, they'll premiere the show, the ratings will tank, and they'll get him on
and
the show.
And then they'll go.
He'll be the new commissioner.
Yeah, exactly. Something. But they
we're
have
bringing it in.
But Delroy Lindo, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Delroy Lindo.
Yeah,
okay.
He's kind of interesting. Yeah. Delroy.
I'll check it out.
I'll check it out.
We'll see. That and what's the my other favorite Chicago?
The Cape?
No, my the favorite Chicago cop show. That's Mike and Molly.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Seriously watch that show, do you?
We've watched a couple of episodes.
Oh, good God, man.
It's got a gentle humor.
Are you looking forward to The Cape? That starts this weekend, Sunday, I think.
No, but I did read Joe Hill's The Cape, and it was really good.
That was good. That's not the same thing, right?
No,
like, that's
no,
not
I
the show's not based on that comic or vice versa. It's not transmedia there, The
it's
Cape
not,
and
not
The Cape?
It's not transmedia, no.
I said on Twitter today, all I can think of when I see the ads for The Cape is Mystery Men when they go to meet the Sphinx and he teaches them how to sew their own costumes. That's what it reminds me of. I don't know.
No, I'll check it out. Of course. Well, it's a Sunday, right? Or
I believe it's Sunday. Yeah, well, it'd be
what network?
NBC, I think.
Okay,
yeah. I think it's NBC.
Yeah. Have you kept up with V at all?
No, I quit watching V really early on. I've heard it's gotten better, but I I still I've still watched, although kind of only. I still tape, I should say, or TiVo, DVR. No Ordinary Family, but. It started out promising, like the first couple episodes I really like, and it's really gotten into sort of a
rut.
It's just so
your Michael Chiklis love couldn't carry through.
Yeah, it really couldn't. And Julie Benz too is in it.
Oh,
yeah.
Julie Benz.
Yeah. But it's just so sort of cliche now. It's just not good.
Maybe they'll get Dennis Franz on it.
They should get Dennis Franz.
Nice. Michael Chiklis was the commish.
And he was John Belushi.
Was he?
What? In The Wire. Or Wired?
Oh, and why? Oh,
that's where he got his start. He was John Belushi.
Oh, well, yeah. He was the commish.
He was the actor. That was after Wired.
Interesting.
He almost completely destroyed his career doing Wired. A lot of people told him not to do that movie, and after he did it, it got bombed, and he didn't get a whole lot of work. And then he did the commission. Then he did the Shield.
Oh, the Shield!
Shield was awesome.
And then he was Ben Grimm.
But yeah, he was John Belushi. Yeah. That was his start. I think that was his first role was John Belushi in Wired.
Is it? Oh my God, he did. He played Curly in a Three Stooges movie.
Michael Chiklis did?
Yeah, he did.
There was a Three Stooges movie?
There was a Three Stooges movie, and he played Curly.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, he's made some bad, bad decisions in his acting career. Yes.
And I remember, it's like, wait, I'm actually watching.
Why did I never see that movie?
Watching Michael Chiklis.
I can understand why you wouldn't see that movie.
Yeah, Michael Chiklis is doing Curly on Curly's deathbed, and Moe getting him to sign away his rights to all of the Three Stooges.
So it was like a biopic. A biopic.
Of the Stooges,
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it any good?
I thought it was pretty good, you know, because it wasn't about their shtick on film, but it was about how they relate it, and it was, of course, you know, that scene where someone actually goes up to Curly in a hotel lobby and actually does the things to him, you know, the poke and the punch is what injured him, which is what he ended up dying from.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that the truth?
Apparently, yeah. Wow. Someone like, you know, just like went up to him when he wasn't looking and just did the whole thing.
Hit him with a 2x4?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and thought it was funny. Yeah.
I know. Houdini died from a fan that
punched him when he wasn't
ready for it.
Yeah,
because he used to do a thing where, like, he would say, you could punch me as hard as you want in the stomach,
mm-hmm.
and like a fan did it, but he wasn't prepared. He wasn't like ready to take the punch, and
mm-hmm.
it
ruptured something
and he ended up dying like a week later from it. Yeah. That's how Houdini died. Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, you know.
It was the times.
Exactly.
You died horribly back then. It wasn't fucking namby-pamby nowadays, dying in a hospital bed, you know, hooked up to a morphine drip.
It was fucking rough. You were dragged out the door by wolves who fed you to crocodiles and then
I never really understood
died
that.
Died a man's death.
I didn't understand that until the episode of Deadwood where Swearingen has to pass the kidney stone.
Oh, God. That's so painful.
That's a great episode.
It's like, holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
And the doc is like, okay, Al, if you don't pass this, I'm going to have to open you up. And, well, you have about a 10% chance, but it's still a chance.
10% chance.
Chances are you're going to die. Ooh,
drink a lot of water, man. A lot of water.
God.
Not whiskey.
That's my fear. Every time I get like a pain in my back, like, you know, I always go, oh, God, please don't be a kidney stone. Please don't. I don't want to have to go through that. I don't know if I could do it. Not sure that I'm getting old. All right. I think we've covered just about. Tony, is there anything else you'd like to discuss, talk about?
More Deadwood.
Let's one more time. The show is
The Static Creep. Yeah, the Static Creep exhibit of sequential art. It's opens Friday, January 14th, 2011 at 6 p.m. at the Los Hermanos Gallery. 5220 North Clark Street, Chicago, Illinois.
Just north of Foster Avenue there in beautiful Andersonville. It's the first neighborhood I moved into when I moved to Chicago.
Yeah, I like Andersonville. It's a very wintry neighborhood.
And because it's a cool story, why don't you tell us where the name Static Creep comes from?
Static Creep. Kind of cool. Yes, aviation term. And, you know, back in the day when planes had propellers, you know, these propellers were hardened steel, just like the toughest part of the plane. And the propeller, as it spun, you know, in flight or whatever, static creep refers to the actual lengthening of a propeller from the centrifugal force.
Ah, over the life of it.
Over the life of it, yeah. So, you know, the propeller would actually had elasticity to it because of the forces applied to it, and that's what static creep is.
That's a cool term.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I like that one a lot.
Nice.
Well, all right, folks, I guess that's it, right?
Yeah.
Another episode. Thank you, Tony.
Thanks for having me on again. Yeah.
And
thank you.
Patton Oswalt propellers and everything in between.
Yeah, no kidding. We covered a lot of bases.
All right. It's
I don't think we talked much about comics, though.
You know,
certainly nothing we read.
Industry stuff. And, that's, you know, I talked about it on 11 o'clock, and with you, I read all of 100 bullets in like 4 days. So,
yeah.
And then you went out and shot someone and
exactly.
drank.
It was awesome. Awesome. So maybe we'll talk about that next time.
Blood smells so good.
Yeah. So this is it for January 2011. I hope everyone has a a wonderful beginning
January.
Of the new year. Yeah, a wonderful January, and we'll see you back in February for the
February.
The shortest of months.
My birth month.
Oh, that's right, it is.
I'll be 40.
I like my.
Oh, wow. Oh. Yeah, it's not,
I like
I'm
not, my.
I don't think I'm going to take it well. I don't think I'm trying. I'm trying to hold it together, but I think at the last.
It's the new 30. That's what Sheryl Crow said.
Exactly.
Speaking of
Sheryl, I don't fucking look like Sheryl Crow. I don't got her money either.
I like my women like the month of February, short and cold.
With that note,
well, on that note,
I think we.
All right, we'll be back next month, folks. Have a good one. Listening to Around Comics for January. I still have them. Sorry.
Jesus.
Okay, start me up.
No. Go ahead.
We're in the Batcave. You're listening to Around Comics for January of 2011. Happy New Year.